the whole wide world. All my niggas in the whole wide world.
Make the sound of the truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
The sun is coming out, so I'm great. The sun was out yesterday, and I was like, yes, the sun is shining. And then it was like 3 o'clock, and it was rain, like torrential. I never thought I would miss the German summer.
Well, you know, I'm not really sure that England has the favor of the gods right now. So I don't know. I'm not sure what's happening.
London just does not have consistent seasons. We like to go through the whole year in a day.
No, it gets consistently cold. I mean, that happens consistently.
That's not cold. We're barely ever below freezing. I don't think that can really be called cold.
Yeah, but the Dementors are out in London on a regular basis. So that happens.
Okay. Jokes this morning. Well, the joke is on us because apparently 4 business students in Chicago can start a Kickstarter campaign for a goal of a measly $10,000 and wind up with $283,000. Because, you know, Kickstarter, they're one of those where you have to meet the goal in order to get the money. Well, they have surpassed the goal by far and will offer the world rompers for him.
Yes, ma'am.
This summer.
Do that.
How you feel about it?
I feel like that's a great idea that has already been done. But it's a cool name, Romp Him.
You said it's already been done?
Oh, come. Come. Have you seen an African man in the summer ever? Have you ever seen this? Like, I have seen it many a time. And then the buttons be down to the belly. Because they got to show the chest. They got to show the chest.
Indeed. Well, Cam Newton already had on a very cute romper. Because, you know, I follow Cam.
Fashion forward Cam.
Hey, you know, people be hating on his fashion sense. But they don't get it. They don't comprehend the genius. Cam already had on a romper at Coachella. I'm not sure. It might have been a romp him. I don't remember. But he was rocking it. He was feeling fly. You know, I love me some Cam. He was looking fly. Hey. But what I thought was interesting was Black Twitter's response, because this is the queer truth and this is what I like to talk about. Black Twitter's response was a little, there was definitely a lot of talk about, because, you know, the picture that kind of went around the world was definitely some bros, right? Those were just a group of bros wearing the romper. Like, the Kickstarter video is just bros in rompers.
Do that.
And it felt like, even in some of the description, even though they didn't use language this way, but even in the description on the Kickstarter, it definitely felt like they were trying to make clear that the romper is not only for gay men. But gay men love fashion, supposedly, right? That's the stereotype. So what if it were only for gay men? Why not? They got enough money. That's a big market.
You know, I have to go back to the source and look at the Kickstarter, but were they trying to say, like, this ain't gay? Like, was this kind of like,
I didn't feel like that
homo
was...
moment, or was it, was it just like rompers are for everybody? Like,
it felt like the tone they were going for was definitely rompers are for everyone. So let me give some quotes since you're a little skeptical, right? So they say specifically, we're revolutionizing men's fashion. I think that's a bit much. Putting a romper on a man is not revolutionary. But they go on, you know, they even in the sizing area, they explain that, you know, if you are a man with, for example, who's 6 feet tall and a 33 waist ordering a medium, you should know that your garment will be fitted and on the shorter side. So if you prefer it to be roomier, you should perhaps go up a size.
Why do you need room? Just you. Just you in that romper. You don't need no room.
And, you know, they felt like in some of the other description, and even if you look at the Kickstarter video, which they, you know, tried to make humorous, it's definitely about bringing style and bringing flattering contours, as they say, to menswear. You know, these people are from Chicago. If you think about the way American men typically dress. You know, there's even the joke, what, on Saturday Night Live, gay or European, you know, mm-hmm. until Lil Wayne started wearing his little skinny jeans. Skinny jeans and tight fitting things were considered something that only gay men do. You know, in the States, in the summer, businessmen wear pleated slacks because you don't want it to just lie down on the leg. You need it to be pleated to be make clear that you are the manly man.
Okay, because you don't want it to lie down on other things either. I think...
but they do specifically it's for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, sure, there's what men wear on the runway, which is a huge departure from what men wear on the street. And from what I see most men on the street wearing, most men, especially cishet straight men, it's pretty boring. So a romper is like, whoa. I'm pretty sure somebody's going to come out with a Kickstarter to revolutionize the wife beater, right? Like, to essentially.
So I might actually buy that, though.
Oh yeah, it'll essentially be the old undershirt white tee, because essentially what men's fashion has become is a recycling of old ideas.
Yes.
Old ideas become new now, right? And with maybe a twist. And then of course there's this sense of, you know, we're going to take what women have been doing forever that genderqueer people have been doing forever, right, or whatever.
Right.
And we're going to turn it into something that now is acceptable for men to do. I mean, like, this happened with the color pink, right? You used to be that man just could not be caught dead wearing pink. And now it's like, you know, it's color.
Right. Now the man who wears pink is comfortable and confident in his sexuality and who he is. And it's a fashion statement.
So this is just another example of queer people leading the way and cishet men deciding that all of a sudden something is now okay for them because they've decided they wanted to capitalize on it.
Oops. Okay. So what I really was excited about this week was Solange and Teen Vogue. I mean, Teen Vogue is just...
Killing it.
You know, that's what happens when you get the right editor in, right? And Solange was having her moment, and her daddy felt the need to come out with an interview, but we're not going to talk about him because he always tries to find a way to keep himself relevant.
In the middle of the interview, he's like, absolutely, that didn't happen. You could learn more about it in my book that I'm selling right now. And also, I will talk to you about this personally for $50,000. What do you want? What do you want? And Matthew knows that I am here to set the record straight and make some money. I love him because he never forgets the pitch. Never. Well, it's in his interview contract. I'm certain of it. He has to pitch.
You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it is. But all jokes aside, like, that's why Beyonce is where she is today, right? That was her manager. Mm-hmm. And he knows what he's doing. I mean, it just has to be said. He knows. In certain instances, when it comes to business, he knows what he's doing. But enough of him. Teen Vogue published a beautifully written letter that Solange wrote to her teenage self. And it's too long for me to read here, but I will just read how she ends it because I think it's beautiful. Quote, there will be pain. There will be doubt. There will be beauty. There will be the unknown. There will be so many moments of joy and delight that the whole universe will feel painted in hues of amber and wonder. There will be times you are so sad you can't lift your head. And there will be times you are so happy that the sensation of life knocks you down. But most importantly, there will be you. A whole lot of it. And you will feel good about who she is and who she is still becoming. End quote. And, you know, just... the whole letter is great to read. It gets you a little bit in your feelings, makes you think about what you would write to your teenage self. I will say, though, there was a moment, like, right before I started reading this letter that I was like, they are so Black. They from Houston. They named their daughter Solange and Beyonce. And then I went on to read what she mentions about herself. She's talking about the football player's girlfriend who wears braided blonde highlights and swears by capri pants. The Nas aficionado brown lip liner and Vaseline face. Wow. Look how far they've come.
Girl, they still in that Vaseline face. Don't get it twisted. Did you see the elevator footage? Because the Vaseline face will come back at a moment's notice. And that's the amazing thing about Blackness is that it never leaves you. It never leaves you. You could be Oprah. Catch Oprah on the wrong day. Catch her on the wrong day.
Right?
And you're going to be like, what billions of dollars? I didn't know. Billions of dollars will come for your neck. So, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a beautiful letter written by someone who, yes, was a teen mom and then went on to do great things. The issue isn't so much that she was a teen mom. It's the issue is about what we do to Black women that expose our racial fears, right? And teen mothers are a huge, they expose our racial fears.
How so?
So profoundly. So profoundly. It's kind of like a crack baby.
What's wrong with
teen mothers.
Wow. What's wrong with being a teen mom?
Oh, there's nothing wrong with being a teen mom. But the way that teen moms are perceived by society is such that it's like you have distilled us into the worst that we could be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that there's much of a difference in how you're viewed as a teen mom and how you're viewed as an ex-con. Now, in full disclosure, I'm a teen mom. I had a child at 18. I also lived in a neighborhood where people went to jail, right? Where people came out of Juvie Hall. I was seen as the worst scourge, right? I was seen as worse than guys that had committed violent crimes, that had committed rape, in the sense that I was seen as someone who essentially populated the ghetto. Now, I didn't populate the ghetto. I don't live in the ghetto. I don't even live in America, right? Like, at the end of the day, none of that was true for me. But
why are you hating on the ghetto, though?
Anybody say I'm hating on the ghetto? I'm just saying that wasn't true for me. Wasn't true for me. But because sometimes Black folks believe lies about themselves, and so many of those lies demonize the Black woman as almost solely responsible for everything wrong with the Black community. The teen mom is the nexus of that.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at all of the larger political rhetoric around welfare queens and so on and so forth that was happening, at least in my days, Reagan era and so on and so forth, and it bled into the Clinton era and also made it possible for them to do widespread welfare reform.
Mm-hmm.
Angela Davis talks about this a lot. So you look at this rhetoric, all this rhetoric does is to demonize the Black woman, and particularly the teen mom, because what the teen mom is perceived as is someone who is starting early on this path of destruction in a willing way and looping innocent children into that path of destruction with her. So there you are at 18 or 17, as in the case of Solange, and all of this weight of the expectations of the Black community and all of the things that you were not able to do is put on your shoulders. And it's also a way that our sexuality is weaponized against us as women.
Uh-huh.
Our sexuality, in essence, isn't even our own. So Solange being a teen mom is probably the worst scourge that she's probably experienced.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at the letter, you see her talking about this is where people really come down on her. Being a teen mom has kind of like marked me with a scarlet letter more than being queer, more than being with a person of the same gender or a trans person, more than being gender variant, more than any other sort of violations of sexual codes. Being a teen mom has been the worst violation.
Uh-huh.
If you look at societal backlash against my being a teen mom, so I feel Solange in every single way talking about that and putting that at the forefront of her experience of coming into her true self. One of the things that did for me being a teen mom is it said after I went through that and was ostracized for that, I definitely went through a period of one of the things I knew was that I could not stay down and raise a child. I could not believe what society believed about me and raise a child. And so if I was going to go forward, I had to go forward as an independent self. So it makes you this kind of like completely independent person, but it also divorced me from giving any fucks whatsoever, you know? And I think we see that throughout Solange's career is that, you know, she's fuckless. She just has none. So I really admire that about her.
I do too. I feel like the letter was very honest, And it was just, it doesn't feel like it was very doctored, very edited, very, you know, this is going in Teen Vogue. This isn't just going in my journal. That's what, well, I really appreciate.
She ain't even using capital letters.
Right, right.
You know when you're not using capital letters, that's just for you.
Like, it's just, I don't know. It's what I appreciate so much about Solange, that she's just who she is. And it's so very different. I know a lot of people on different podcasts that I listen to, my favorite music podcast, will often express the question, is she caught in her sister's shadow? And I have always said no. Obviously, you know, we know how I feel about her sister, but not even because of that. It's just who she is. They're so different. She,
hold on a second. Let me put on a sweater. I'm in the shade.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, I just feel like she does her. But I do have to point out, just for a moment, why, when people do these photo shoots for magazines, does everything have to be so expensive? She is in a jumpsuit that costs $3,330 and a belt that costs $1,000. Her earrings cost $1,185. I'm just like, and the boots cost $1,100.
Nothing illustrates the illusory nature of capitalism more than fashion. I mean, it's all about perception. I mean, like, at the end of the day, a belt's a belt.
A belt, right? Is a belt.
But, you know, I could put all manner of price tags on any kind of belt. And so that's, you know, it's just, it's nonsense, of course. And it is Teen Vogue. And you, as we said, they have been repping on a political front. So, you know, they got to do a little Vogueness in there somewhere.
They do. it still is Vogue. You are correct. But I just had to throw that out there. I don't pick up these magazines. I've never read them. I've never been interested in them. And anytime that I, you know, did happen to have it in my hand while in a doctor's office, I put it back down because it just made me feel horrible. So I'm glad that my instincts had my back.
Educated strong woman like you be feeling horrible at the fashion magazine?
Like, I'm just like, oh, I need this. And hold on.
You feel that way?
Who are you? Who are you? Put it back down. Thank you.
it's like what I tell my son about food, you know, and junk food in general. It's like a fashion magazine in the sense that there are scientists, food scientists in one case and social scientists or psychologists in another case, that completely have gotten this down so that beyond what you know theoretically and ideologically, you still have the same emotional triggers when you're looking at these designer clothes or when you're looking at whatever they're trying to sell in the magazine, because that's their entire business and they make sure it gets through to you.
So for me, it's not so much the fashion itself, because, you know, I don't know anything about fashion. But it's just the idea that you need all these things. That's what gets me. So, like, you open one of the magazines, supposedly for women, right? And it's already starting with the lipstick. You know I don't wear lipstick. Then it's like, and then you need this to clean your face. And I have great skin. I drink a lot of water. I use some basic stuff like Neutrogena, right? And then it's like, and then you need, and I'm just like, what? Why do I need all these things? What? And then I'm like, okay, no, actually, I don't. I just need to close the magazine and I'll be all right. Mm-hmm. I haven't really found that strength yet on junk food, but that we'll talk about another day.
I just want to bring this full circle back to the Matthew Knowles interview, which is what is very important in here, in the sense that he came in his interview, one of the things he said, it's, you could tell he a bad father because he was he a bad dad. This is what he said exactly. He said, oh, I'm very proud of Beyonce, but I'm even more proud of Solange. Now, if you got two children, you know, more well, proud.
He has a lot of kids, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I'm sorry. But you do not do that. You don't say I'm more proud of, or I love more, or, you know, any of that nonsense. But anyhow, but he Texas, so we're going to give him a pass. But he said he's more proud of Solange because they had it all mapped out for her. They wanted to make her a big pop star and they had a record deal for her. And she decided that she wanted to go her own way. And she went her own way and it is beautiful. And so, see how Matthew sums it up?
In our second segment, I would like to talk about something that we didn't post about. Oh, naughty us. I'm sorry. May 17th. I missed the date. Excuse me for that. I did like see it on social media and just didn't think to post it on the Queer Truth. I do apologize for those of you who do follow us on Twitter and Facebook that I missed that. But it was International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. And you know, I feel like I don't know why this day exists, really, because there's the month of June, which is like Pride Month. I don't know. You know, it was created in 2004 to draw the attention of policymakers, opinion leaders, social movements, and blah, 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 to the violence and discrimination experienced by the LGBTI community internationally. And apparently it's even celebrated or observed, or, you know, there are events happening in 140 countries, which is amazing. But I don't know, like, what the differentiator is. I mean, I feel like this day specifically focuses on violence and discrimination. And I'm really excited that it's like the first time in like community history that biphobia has like an actual slot, right? May 17th was chosen because it commemorates when the World Health Organization finally decided in 1990 to declassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. If you didn't hear me, let me repeat. May 17th, 1990. Was the day that the World Health Organization decided to declassify homosexuality as a mental disorder. So that's the reason for the date. It wasn't until 2015 that biphobia was added to the title, but transphobia was added in 2009. Yeah, like, I don't know, like, with June right around the corner and Pride, which is obviously a celebration, but also often used as a platform to talk about the many forms of discrimination and violence that the community experiences. And this isn't only physical violence. This is, you know, socioeconomic violence. This is violence at the workplace and so forth. I don't know, like, do we need this day? Is it important? What happens? What
does it do for hopefully, you? Yeah. So hopefully what's happening on this day is that it acts as an educational opportunity for mainstream publications to talk about issues with regard to LGBT discrimination. That's the hope. I haven't seen that happening in a lot of mainstream publications yet, but I'm hoping that that becomes one of the things that can happen with an awareness day. This is what has happened with ALS awareness. That's what's happened with breast cancer awareness, is that, you know, they started sharing ideas for giving yourself breast cancer examinations at home. And it actually ended up saving a lot of lives. It reached people that wouldn't normally give themselves an exam or look at their health in a way. And this even happened with testicular cancer awareness. Having these kind of mainstream pushes for awareness, it's very helpful. And I'd like to keep June as Pride Month, and I'd like to keep Pride in general as a celebration. Mm-hmm. I think that making Pride be also about pushing back against phobia, pushing back against discrimination, it puts too much on Pride. And but you can't celebrate in the wake of that. It does that. I mean, any kind of celebration does that, but that's not... That I don't think that was has ever been the focus of Pride. Pride has been about us for us.
Right.
I mean, that's why there is so much pushback against the corporatization of Pride.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
And, you know, alcohol companies are now sponsoring Prides and things like that. So people are pushing back against that because Pride has never been about that. Pride has been about us celebrating us. Now, if straight people want to come to Pride and show that they're allies or be in solidarity or whatever, that's fine. But it's not about, that's not where the focus is. To me, in Idahot, are people saying that?
you can say Idahobbit.
Idahobbit?
Uh-huh. That's okay. The new one.
On this day, I think the focus, because anytime the focus is phobia, discrimination, then the focus is actually on straight people because it's on their behavior. Mm-hmm. It's pushing back against a specific oppressive behavior, right? So, for example, I don't think Black History Month is necessarily, you know, the month to stand up against white supremacy. It's the month to celebrate Black history.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So it's, yeah. So no, Pride is not Idahobbit. they're two different things. I see where people are trying to go with this. There have been other successful campaigns that have done this really well, and I hope that this campaign grows.
You were talking about mainstream publications. We have a video on our Facebook page that came from BBC Three, where basically they just have individuals who identify as a variety of different things talk about their experience first in coming out, what that means to them, and then I'm not sure if there are more clips. I've only seen this one clip, which is about 2.5 to 3 minutes, and somehow it eventually takes the turn into mental health. That might have been on purpose because, you know, it is Mental Health Awareness Week and month and those things. But it wasn't clear to me how we got to mental health, but it definitely did talk about the fact that people of the Ida Hobbit obviously are more vulnerable to mental health issues because of, you know, the daily grind, as we all know. And I just wonder, you know, the coming out story leading then to the mental health, I don't know what that signals, but I feel like mainstream publications often will try to jump on something. Oh, let's talk about this. And then they kind of fail.
Or do it in an irresponsible way, right?
Right.
Because there's an oppressive narrative that is false, that the reason people are not heterosexual or not gender conforming is because they are facing mental health challenges. So that used to be systemic, that narrative. That narrative used to be actually encouraged by mental health professionals as truth, as science. Mm-hmm. And so to just lead into that then sort of reinstates that idea. What I hope that they were trying to do with that is to say, look, you know, this person is dealing with this and this and this and this coming out. And if anybody deals with A, B, C, and D, an inevitable effect of that will be mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't matter why. If you're a refugee and you're dealing with A, B, C, and D, or if you're gay and dealing with A, B, C, and D, whatever the issue, whatever the nexus of that is, whatever reason people find to treat you in this way and to throw all these things at you will be why you deal with mental health issues. Hopefully that's where they're going with it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But that's of course assuming the best case scenario, and I feel like that should be clarified. We are dealing with the scourge of conversion therapy in the United States, so that is not adequately regulated. The state of California has outlawed conversion therapy. What conversion therapy is if your son or daughter says that they are queer in some way, that you could send them to a center that purports to be a mental health center or something of that nature, a reform school, let's say. It's really a prison for queer kids. And they try to do all of these things to make them not be queer, essentially, that are not scientifically proven to work, that are actually extremely damaging, that are very traumatic for the people that survive it.
But I'm a cheerleader.
It's essentially, yeah, it's essentially child abuse. There's a movie, we're all heads, you know, we got to explain these things, but I'm a cheerleader is a movie. It is a movie that is a comical look at a conversion center. And it's actually I thought it was a very good comedy.
It was hilarious. And RuPaul is in it for all of the fans.
So, I mean, but that was a best case scenario, but I'm a cheerleader.
Of course.
Mean, most of these things end up with people being scarred. It's essentially child abuse and torture to be in a conversion therapy environment. Some states have outlawed it. Other states have not. We're dealing with a really fraught political environment to be conflating mental health issues with coming out as queer. So that should have been more responsibly done by the BBC.
Absolutely. And if you're interested, you can go to dayagainsthomophobia.org to learn more about it. That is the official website, and it explains what May 17th is, and it gives you some insight into how you can take action as well as what's happening in, you know, over 140 countries. In our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to? Go! You! What it is? What it be?
So, you know, old age is setting in. Oh. And I don't leave my house for a whole lot of things.
Okay.
Last night, there was an amazing showing for the Queer Film Night, which is put on by the Transitions Queer Minority Film Festival. And the Queer Film Night showed the movie called The Misandrists. And unfortunately, because I'm a shut-in, I missed it. But tonight, there is a professor coming from the United States, from Rutgers Universities, who has a whole course on Beyoncé, your favorite person. And he is giving a lecture called Politicizing Beyoncé and highlighting how her entire career would work as a feminist justice, I imagine, given what his previous work has done. So it's going to be interesting. They got liberté, égalité, and Beyoncé. I knew you would love that. Please. I knew you would love that.
Please.
That's what's going down.
Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Please stop.
You want me to stop? So his name is Professor Kevin Alfred. And he is a professor who also got a little bit of internet fame about a year ago when he criticized President Trump on Twitter. And then they sent him in for psychological evaluation. Because that's a political environment we are living in right now. But I'm interested to see what he has to say. So that's really exciting. And then, you know, it's festival season here in Vienna, you know, where we have a festival every whatever. But what's been really interesting is the push towards, I want to say, Black American culture has had a huge upsurge here in Vienna. I'm not really sure how and why. Mm-hmm. Toots and the Maytals just came and they performed here. It was amazing. And there is now a leggings party, no booty, no party kind of thing going on. So I'm trying to like make sense of it. There's a ton of jazz everywhere. I'm like, okay, Vienna, what's going on? I thought this was European classical music and Mozart. So that's what's happening in Vienna right now. So that's interesting. I'll be investigating and reporting back. Mm-hmm. And Jordan Peele is going to be directing a Kira, as well as a horror series for Netflix about Jim Crow. So I'm looking forward to seeing how that go down. What are you looking forward to?
So Ice Cube has confirmed that a fourth and final Friday film. Yes. And they're going to call it Last Friday.
Why?
Yes. I don't know.
Why?
I don't know. Look, why? I was happy actually after 1995. I didn't need Next Friday in 2000. I didn't need Friday After Next in 2002, but I am that person who will probably go see Last Friday, just like I went to see Alien Covenant last week. And I will say, if you don't have to, you don't have to go see it in the theater, because no, there was no newness to it. It was just like another alien movie. Mm-hmm. So that was disappointing. Last Friday will probably also be disappointing, but hey, I'm gonna go see it. I'm excited about it. I think it's kind of cool, but I really wish that Hollywood would just like figure it out that we're ready for some new stuff. Like, we don't need churning out things that
this is the rom-com of movies. Recycling old ideas.
I'm also excited about something I just found out is happening very soon at the British Film Institute. They will be showing Daughters of the Dust.
Yes, do it.
Over and over again over the course of like a week. And I plan on going to see it.
Okay.
And I will report back about The Real Lemonade.
Okay, that's but did you saw the original before, of course, right?
This is the original that they're showing.
No, I'm just saying you've seen it before.
No, I've not seen Daughters of the Dust. Exactly.
This is going to be your first time?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, get ready.
I am ready.
You need to come in a white flowing dress. I'm going to need you to cleanse yourself in some Florida water beforehand.
Wow.
And I'm going to need you to have a long talk with your ancestors.
Okay.
And then you can go see Daughters of the Dust. I need you to bring some dirt from the front of your house.
Wow. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. And if you're able, maybe donate to our Patreon site, patreon.com/thequeertruth. Until next time, peace out.